material opulences, this does not mean that the Lord puts him into poverty. Rather, the Lord promotes him to a higher position. The Supreme Personality of Godhead did not ask Bali Maharaj to separate from his family. Instead, the Lord allowed him to stay with his family members. Gyatipi parivarita. Text 34. Natvam abhi bhavishyanti lokesha kim utapare tvachasang tighan dhaityangs chakrang me sudayishyati. On the planet Sutala, not even the predominating deities of the other planets, what to speak of ordinary people, will be able to conquer you. As far as the demons are concerned, if they transgress your rule, my disc will kill them. Om Gyana Timirandhasya Gyanam Janishlakaya Chakshuram Nilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangam Langhayate Gidim Jat Kripa Tamaham Vande Shri Gurum Dinataranam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamini Tinamani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pascha Tidesha Tarini Pancha Kalpaturu Vyastra Kripa Sindho Vyayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. O Bali Maharaj, now you may go to the planet Sutala, which is desired even by the demigods. Live there peacefully, surrounded by your friends and relatives. All good fortune unto you. On the planet Sutala, not even the predominating deities of the other planets, what to speak of ordinary people, will be able to conquer you. As far as the demons are concerned, if they transgress your rule, my disc will kill them. So, we're kind of wrapping up the Lord's response to the arguments for Bali Maharaj's release. I'm just kind of review it up to here. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Lord Brahma, because of material opulence, a foolish person becomes dull-witted and mad. Thus he has no respect for anyone within the three worlds and defies even my authority. To such a person I show special favor by first taking away all his possessions. While rotating in the cycle of birth and death again and again in different species because of his own fruitive activities, the dependent living entity by good fortune may happen to become a human being. This human birth is very rarely obtained. If a human being is born in an aristocratic family or a higher status of life, if he performs wonderful activities, if he is youthful, if he has personal beauty, a good education, and good wealth, and if he is nonetheless not proud of his opulences, it is to be understood that he is especially favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although aristocratic birth and other such opulences are impediments to advancement in devotional service because they're causes of false prestige and pride, these opulences never disturb a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Bali Maharaj has become the most famous among the demons and non-believers, for in spite of being bereft of all material opulences, he's fixed in his devotional service. Although bereft of his riches, fallen from his original position, defeated and arrested by his enemies, rebuked and deserted by his relatives and friends, although suffering the pain of being bound, and although rebuked and cursed by his spiritual master, Bali Maharaj, being fixed in his vow, did not give up his truthfulness. It was certainly with pretension that I spoke about religious principles, but he did not give up religious principles, for he is true to his word. Satyavak, true to his word. The Lord continued, because of his great tolerance, I've given him a place not obtainable even by the demigods. He will become king of the heavenly planets during the period of the Manu known as Savarni. Until Bali Maharaj achieves the position of king of heaven, he shall live on the planet Sutala, which was made by Vishvakarma according to my order. Because it is especially protected by me, it is free from mental and bodily miseries, fatigue, dizziness, defeat, and all other disturbances. Then he turns to Bali, looks at Bali. Bali Maharaj, you may now go to live there peacefully. O Bali Maharaj, now you may go to the planet Sutala, which is desired even by the demigods. Live there peacefully, surrounded by your friends and relatives, all good fortune unto you. On the planet Sutala, not even the predominating deities of the other planets, what to speak of ordinary people, will be able to conquer you. As far as the demons are concerned, if they transgress your rule, my disc will kill them. So, we've seen Bali Maharaj over the last couple of months, we've seen Bali Maharaj on top, and we've seen him go down, and we've seen him go down harder and farther. And now we see him going back up again. Life's like that even for great personalities. These things happen. These things happen even to great personalities. Life has its ups and its downs. The story of Lord Buddha, the way that story goes, is that he was so protected. His parents were so eager not to lose him, because they saw he was a thoughtful boy, that they decided to protect him from, Janma Mrityu Jara Vyadhi, right? From life's miseries. Because they knew that if he saw how miserable life was, then he'd lose interest, which is kind of his character. But, as fate would have it, one day he actually left the walls somehow, got outside the palace, saw an old man, saw a sick man, saw a poor man, saw a dying man, and he thought, what's this about? And immediately his life, and his whole direction of his life changed. In some Buddhist traditions there are poems written kind of recounting Prince Siddhartha's taking leave of his wife and going off to find enlightenment. So, and this is actually, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, this is actually a sign of real wisdom. Seeing the problems posed by birth, death, old age, and disease. At the same time, if someone's actually noble, especially someone's actually spiritually advanced, we understand that these things come and go in everybody's lives. Goodness knows, Queen Elizabeth of England, you go back 60, almost 60 years when she was coronated, it was like this fairy tale thing. This young, kind of attractive lady being crowned the Queen of England, and she had this, tall, handsome Greek prince, and then she had all these lovely children, and then the children grew up and caused her all kinds of problems and embarrassment. So, even the Queen of England, there was a musical when I was a kid called Camelot. And there was a song that had kind of two strands. The common folk were singing, "I wonder what the king is doing tonight." And the king was singing, "What do the simple folk do?" In other words, the grass is always greener. Everybody's thinking, the king is thinking, "Well, my life is so complicated. There's all these court politics and then external politics, all these problems, and my rotten kids growing up and embarrassing me because they're just rich and spoiled." But the other people, their lives are so nice and simple. It must be really sweet just to kind of live out in the country on a farm and go out in the morning and milk the cows and go out and pull a couple of weeds and then bring your harvest into the market and sit around the fire with your friends and drink and sing songs and tell lies, and what a nice life that must be. And the common folk are thinking, "Our life is so miserable. I have to get up before dawn to go out and milk the cows. Then I have to go out and plow and weed and fix fences and fix the barn and do all these things. And then a drought comes, or like here, got all my oranges growing out there, and all of a sudden a really deep freeze down into the teens, and then next week another one, and then the week after that another one. My life is destroyed. I can't get credit. How am I going to live? My kids are going, you know, farmers all over India are killing themselves because they don't know how to deal with their problems. Must be so nice to live up on the hill in the palace with all those nice clothes and all those fancy people around you. Wow, what a nice life. But everybody's lives has these waves that come and go. And if you live on the surface of life, you're going to be buffeted by those waves. There's just no way to avoid it. The only way to avoid being buffeted by those waves is to live deep in the ocean, right? So we see in Bali Maharaj, there are all these ups and downs. What we don't see in Bali Maharaj is him being affected by them in any way. He was a king of the universe. He had conquered even the demigods. King of the universe. Nice wife, nice family, lots of followers. Practically everything belonged to him. And even though he was born in a family of, what do we call, what does his prophet say? The Lord say of atheists and unbelievers, demons and unbelievers. He was the grandson of whom? Who? Prashangi? Prahlad. So actually not a bad family when it, you know, as it turns out. And so he inherited some of his grandfather's nice characteristics, and he's using those to, he's this naturally noble character, completely surrendered, and he had this determination his entire life. That if ever anybody comes to ask anything of me, especially a Brahmana, I'll give it, whatever he wants. So then, sure enough, one day this little Brahmin boy comes, very sweet, innocent looking. He's all worshiping him all nicely. How, you know? So what can I do for you? And the little Brahmin boy says, actually, look at me, I'm a brahmachari. I don't need much. Just 3 paces of land. All I need is enough, you know, some place to lie down. That's all I need. Says, well, look, I could give you anything. I could give you half the universe if you want. Nah, that's all I need. So, as we know, with his first step, he took the lower and middle planetary systems. With his second step, he took everything else. And what's one of Vamanadeva's names that kind of illustrates what's going on? Radheshan? Trivikram or Urukram, right? Trivikram, he took 3 steps. Urukram, he takes wonderful steps. Took such wonderful steps that his second step pierced the covering of the universe. And what came through that, the hole in the covering of the universe? Narayani? Mother Ganga. So, Urukram, pretty amazing steps, huh? But there's one step left. Bali Maharaj had made a promise. Vamanadeva looks at him and says, oh, okay, now we've got a problem. You promised me 3 steps of land. With 2 steps, I've actually taken everything from you. You've got nothing left to give. What are you going to do? You've got a problem here. Did Bali Maharaj see a problem? Not at all. Look, I still have my head. Place your third step on my head. Take me. So, there he was, penniless, servant of a Brahmin boy. Was he disturbed at all by any of this? Absolutely not. He didn't flinch at all. Even though he had been advised by his guru, sidebar Maharaj, listen, this is actually Vishnu. It's a trick. Don't fall for it. You're walking right into a trap. Whatever. Not a problem. Okay, it's a trap. Maybe it's a cool trap. I don't know. Maybe it's an awful trap. Doesn't matter. I made a promise. I have to fulfill my promise. He didn't flinch. So then what Shukracharya comes to pass. Still, Bali is completely unfazed. Then he gets arrested and hauled down to hell. Loses everything. What do we see? lost his riches, fell from his position, arrested by his enemies, rebuked and deserted by his relatives and friends, rebuked and deserted by his spiritual master. Still, his blood pressure didn't go up a bit. He didn't get depressed. He didn't see this like, you see in, sometimes in stories about when somebody gets arrested. It's like all of a sudden, oh, everything caught up to me. My whole life is falling apart. You don't see that in Bali Maharaj. What you see is, okay, this is what's coming. And you don't even necessarily have to be a great devotee to have such an attitude. Even the Buddhists have this mindfulness, their sense is, oh, this is what's happening now. Not much you can do about it. I mean, you can try, but ultimately, it's either going to come or it's not going to come. And that's not so much complacence, but it's, especially in the case of devotees, it's surrender. So we see in Bali Maharaj, we see complete surrender. Atma Samarpana, right? He's completely giving himself to Krishna. So, it says here that the Lord didn't ask Bali Maharaj to separate from his family. He gave him an even better position than he had before. He was actually going to become Indra, and in the meantime, he got to live in a place that made even the residents of Swargaloka envious, made them jealous. I want to live there, right? So that's what happens when you surrender, right? You become rich, famous, powerful. Maybe. But we see a different example elsewhere. This has been referred to a couple of times over the last few days, and I just thought I'd bring these verses in. I used to have these verses memorized, but so many books and papers and things in between. These are a couple of verses from the fifth chapter of the first canto of the Bhagavatam, where Narada Muni is instructing Vyasadeva. And in text 17, Narada says, Chiptvasvadharmam charanambujam harer bhajannapakpo tapate tato yadi yatra kva vabhadram abhuda mushikin kovarta apto bhajatam svadharmata. One who has forsaken his material occupations to engage in the devotional service of the Lord may sometimes fall down while in an immature stage. Yet there's no danger of his being unsuccessful. On the other hand, a non-devotee, though fully engaged in occupational duties, does not gain anything. Text 18 is also a nice verse, but I usually kind of pair 17 and 19 together. Where 18? Oh, I lost some of my pages. Oh, no, I didn't. Text 18 says, persons who are actually intelligent and philosophically inclined should endeavor only for that purposeful end which is not obtainable even by wandering from the topmost planet, Brahmaloka, down to the lowest planet, Patala. As far as happiness derived from sense enjoyment is concerned, it can be obtained automatically in the course of time, just as in the course of time we obtain miseries, even though we do not desire them. And then he says, Nivai janu jatu katanchana vrajen mukunda sevyanvayaranga samshritim smaran mukundangari upaguharam punar vihatu michen naraso grahochana. My dear Vyas, even though a devotee of Lord Krishna sometimes falls... Can everybody hear me? I'm not sure I can hear myself. My dear Vyas, even though a devotee of Lord Krishna sometimes falls down somehow or other, he certainly does not undergo material existence like others, fruitive workers, etc., because a person who's once relished the taste of the lotus feet of the Lord can do nothing but remember that ecstasy again and again. Now, Srila Prabhupada's purport is interesting. A devotee of Lord Krishna automatically becomes uninterested in the enchantment of material existence because he is rasagraha, or one who has tasted the sweetness of the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. There are certainly many instances where devotees of the Lord have fallen down due to uncongenial association, just like fruit of workers who are always prone to degradation. But even though he falls down, a devotee is never to be considered the same as a fallen karmi. A karmi suffers the result of his own fruit of reactions, whereas a devotee is reformed by chastisement directed by the Lord himself. The sufferings of an orphan and the sufferings of a beloved child of a king are not one and the same. An orphan is really poor because he has no one to take care of him. But a beloved son of a rich man, although he appears to be on the same level as an orphan, is always under the vigilance of his capable father. A devotee of the Lord, due to wrong association, sometimes imitates the fruit of workers. The fruit of workers want to lord it over the material world. Similarly, a neophyte devotee foolishly thinks of accumulating some material power in exchange for devotional service. Such foolish devotees are sometimes put into difficulty by the Lord himself. As a special favor, he may remove all paraphernalia. By such action, the bewildered devotee is forsaken by all friends and relatives, and so he comes to his senses again by the mercy of the Lord and is set right to execute his devotional service. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that such fallen devotees are given a chance to take birth in a family of highly qualified brahmanas or in a rich mercantile family. A devotee in such a position is not as fortunate as one who is chastised by the Lord and put into a position seemingly of helplessness. I'll read that one again. A devotee in such a position is not as fortunate as one who is chastised by the Lord and put into a position of seemingly of helplessness. A devotee who becomes helpless by the will of the Lord is more fortunate than those who are born in good families. The fallen devotees born in a good family may forget the lotus feet of the Lord because they are less fortunate, but the devotee who's put into a forlorn condition is more fortunate because he swiftly returns to the lotus feet of the Lord, thinking himself helpless all around. Pure devotional service is so spiritually relishable that the devotee becomes automatically uninterested in material enjoyment. That is a sign of perfection in progressive devotional service. A pure devotee continually remembers the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna and does not forget him even for a moment, not even in exchange for all the opulence of the three worlds. So it may be that one of the things that's been discussed over the last few days is that if someone gets material opulence and can't handle it, then Krishna takes it, may take it away. And that's kind of addressed here. But we also see that even someone who can handle nice material life may have everything taken away. This verse has also been mentioned. Yasyaha manugranami harishyeta dhanam shanai. The gist is, if Krishna likes somebody, he'll give them everything. If Krishna loves somebody, he'll take harishya, he'll take everything away. And who do we see this in? Students. We see this happen even in someone who is actually completely fixed in pure devotional service, may have lost everything. Okay, older students? Madan Mohan Prabhu? Yeah, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada could certainly, he was not distracted by his business when it was a success. It took some time for him to maintain his business and to try to grow his business. And sometimes he kind of shirked in those duties, especially when he had Sridhar Maharaj, his godbrother Sridhar Maharaj, and some of his other godbrothers and friends living upstairs from him. He'd sometimes just close his shop and go upstairs and hang out with the devotees and talk about Krishna. But he did work hard to kind of, to maintain his business because he felt, well, I'm a family man. If I make some money and eventually I can retire, and my Guru Maharaj suggested that I preach to people in English, so I'm doing everything I can to do that. But he was so dedicated to that that Krishna actually arranged for there to be nothing else for him to do, and arranged for everything to kind of fall apart. And his spiritual master called him a couple of times, and I want you to come out with me, come out wherever you are. So we see that even a great devotee, there he was, suddenly penniless, wandering here and there. He left with nothing. By some accounts, in the middle of the night. And completely, some of his godbrothers analyzed that he had completely emptied his heart of anything other than the desire to fulfill this order of his spiritual master. That was a suggestion. I think that if you preach in English, it'll be good for you and good for the people who hear you. It's a suggestion. He took it as an order. He took it as this huge, you know, my spiritual master. How many times did we hear, my spiritual master ordered me? So he took it that seriously. So that's, you know, that's his example as well. And we see how that's what makes us completely eligible for the mercy of the Lord. In Brahma's prayers, there's that very famous verse, which I also used to know, Tate nukam pam susamikshamano bhunjana evatma kirtam vipakam hridvag vapurvir vidadham namaste jiveta yo mukti pade sadayapa. One who earnestly waits for you to bestow his causeless mercy on him, and all the while patiently suffers the reactions of his past activities, and continues to offer you respectful obeisances with his heart, words, and body, is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim. Srila Prabhupada sometimes says it has become his rightful inheritance, just as somebody who grows up in a family with some money has a right, you know, has a kind of a natural claim to that wealth. And Srila Prabhupada himself, at the end of the Vyas Puja offering he made in Mumbai in 1936, I think it was, said this. And I remember reading this, maybe it was before I moved into the temple. I don't think it made much of an impression until after I moved into the temple. Reading this speech, it was printed in a Back to Godhead in 69 or 70. Personally, I have no hope for any direct service for the coming crores of births of the sojourn of my life, but I am confident that someday or other I shall be delivered from this mire of delusion into which I am at present so deeply sunk. Therefore, let me with all my earnestness pray at the lotus feet of my divine master to allow me to suffer the lot for which I am destined due to my past misdoings, but to let me have this power of recollection that I am nothing but a tiny servant of the Almighty Absolute Godhead realized through the unflinching mercy of my divine master. Let me therefore bow down at his lotus feet with all humility at my command. So what we see here is same thing that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us in his Shikshastakam. Nadhanam, najanam, nasundirim, kavitam, va, jagadisha, kavitam. Mama janmani, janmanishvare, bhavatad, bhakti, ahoitikita. Whatever the material world has to offer, I don't really have any interest in. Liberation, I have no interest in it. I have one interest only, that birth after birth, I may have causeless devotional service to you. This is Lord Chaitanya describing the stage of Ruchi. We've also heard the different stages of bhakti discussed over the last few days. This verse describes the stage of Ruchi, both by its tatastha lakshana, its tangential or kind of external characteristics, what it's not. There are different ways you can describe something, you can define something by telling what it's not and what it is. So these are the kind of non-essential characteristics. And we see this also in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Anyabhilashita Shunyam Jnana Karmadhyanavritam. No desire for anything that isn't favorable to devotional service. And then Krishna Anushilanam. Then the Swarupa Lakshana. So, Nadhanam, Najanam, Nasundarim, Kavitam, Va, Jagadisha Kamaye. This is the Tatastha Lakshana. This is not having a taste for devotion itself. And at the stage of Ruchi, we engage in devotion just because we can't do anything else. Nothing else has any appeal. We're not freaked out by it. We're not repulsed by it. We just don't care about it. Nothing matters except our service. We don't have any life except for our service. We get up in the morning. At the stage of anartha nivritti, we may be getting up in the morning Bathing, chanting our rounds, doing our puja, going to kirtan, whatever sadhana we have in the morning. We may be doing that because we know it's good for us. At the stage of ruchi, we get up in the morning, bathe, chant our rounds, do our puja, go to kirtan, because that's what there is to do. So that's something we can aspire for, attaining this kind of stage of ruchi. And we kind of see this the Bhagavatam is just a collection of stories of Sharanagatas, people who surrendered to Krishna. And Bali Maharaj, we see, never flinched once. Even when his spiritual master told him, don't do it, bad idea. Prabhupada says, Bali Maharaj rejected the instructions of his spiritual master when they went against service to Vishnu. Therefore, he is Mahajan. You can find it in the Veda base in a letter to Satswarupa Maharaj. But he also said it. There was a talk, I can't find it anymore, but there was a lecture in which he made exactly the same point. Because Bali Maharaj gave up the instructions, defied the instructions of his unqualified spiritual master, therefore he is Mahajan. And in this letter to Satsarupa, he's actually being, one of the questions is, why do we consider Bali Maharaj a Mahajan? And Srila Prabhupada leads with that. Shukracharya, well, he was Shukra Acharya. He was a seminal guru. He was a Jati Gosai. And because, you know, this is his kind of job, this is the job he inherited, being the spiritual master to the demons, naturally you take advice from him. But when the advice goes against all good sense, goes against Guru Sadhu and Shastra, goes against Krishnanu Shilanam, then you can reject him. And thereby, Mahajano Yena Gatasapan, to follow in the footsteps of the Mahajans. So this is not one of the longer chapters in the Bhagavatam, but it's really rich. Very full. There's a lot going on, and there's a lot for us to think about. Comments or questions or objections? Mukunda Prabhu?
I do have one. I think you touched on something today. It was touched on the other day. I heard it while I was at home. I wasn't at the class. But I think it is an important thing to get clarity about exactly what the nature of our practice is in terms of Vaidhi and Raganuga, because Srila Prabhupada has mentioned the two things and has gone into very much detail in Chaitanya Charitamrita, but we've kind of dealt with it sort of in a connotated way. You know, we've understood Vaidhi Bhakti to be basic practice and Raganuga to be an advanced practice. But really, Vaidhi Bhakti that we practice is not pure Vaidhi Bhakti. Because pure Vaidhi Bhakti, according to Chaitanya Charitamrita, Sakale Jagate More Vaidhi Bhakti, Vaidhi Bhakti, Braja Baba Paiti Nai Shakti. That by that Vaidhi Bhakti, you cannot go to Braja Vrindavan. Now, if that's the case, but we come in the morning and part of our practice is to beg Tulsi Devi, please give me residence in Vrindavan, there would be some incongruity. You understand? In other words, if we're praying, I want to go to Vrindavan, but by this practice, according to Chaitanya Charitamrita, you cannot go to Vrindavan. It would be incongruous. So Jiva Goswami has mentioned this practice of Vaidhi is called Vaidhi Pravritti. In other words, it is Vaidhi or rules and regulations practiced by those who aspire to, in the future, by this practice, develop rag or attachment to Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan. And also Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has really said, Shravanam Kirtanandani, Nija Abhimana Sha Vrajendra Nandana Seva Prati Lobena. If you're doing Shravanam Kirtanam, the other angas of bhakti, with a desire to serve Vrajendra Nandan Krishna, then this cannot be called purely Vaidhi Bhakti. This process is called Raganuga. But because we're not qualified for Raganuga, it is called Raganuga Pravritti, or Vaidhi that aspires to Raganuga. So in South India, in Sri Sampradaya, they're truly practicing Vaidhi Bhakti, because
In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, chapter 4 also clearly says that by Vaidhi Bhakti, you will obtain Vaikuntha. So this clarification is necessary. Also, Shravanam Kirtanandani, Sastra Sashina Bhayana. If you're practicing bhakti due to fear of punishment, then that thing is also called Vaidhi Bhakti. So if purely our motive for coming was, oh, you know, if I don't do this, I'm going to suffer and go to hell, then that's one thing. But if we're coming and we think, oh, Radha and Krishna, very beautiful, born to die, very beautiful, we're having Krishna Balaram come very soon. If this mood is there, then this Vaidhi is Raganuga Pravritti, because we're hoping by following this practice, gradually, Rag will come in my heart. So this clarity is important, because sometimes devotees are expressing some confusion. Oh, what is Raganuga? Maybe that's something really advanced. And what day will we walk in and say, today's the day I'm advanced? Today, today I'll be practicing Raganuga. That doesn't really happen. So, and Srila Prabhupada used the word spontaneous when he was describing. So for years I thought, well, spontaneous means, okay, one day I'm going to wake up and I won't be tired in the morning for Mangal Arati. But it doesn't mean that. You'd be tired anyway, but you're getting up because you have desire. Hearing about this thing, the beauty of Radha Krishna, beauty of Vrindavan, beauty of the practice, I want to obtain this thing, so I'm getting up, even if I'm tired.
Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in one of his songs, also makes the same point, that those who engage in the angas of Vaidhi Bhakti, and it's that we see the 64 angas that are described in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, those are actually angas of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. But he says those who do that, aspiring to attain to Raga Anuga Bhakti, he says they eventually, by their practice and the mercy of the name, they receive that freedom. However, the thing is that the external practice may not change at all. They may still be getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, getting in the car at 4:15, heading down 235 to the temple for Mangal Arati, chanting 16 rounds, and all the other things. The external may not change. What distinguishes Vaidhi Bhakti and Raga Nuga Bhakti is just that, what you were pointing out. It's the goal, it's the motivation. And, you know, if the motivation, one way we see it is described is if your motivation is to adhere to the rules of the Shastras, then that's Vaidhi Bhakti, but then be Vaidhi Pravritti if you have some aspiration for something more. Because we see even in the song that we sing at Mangal Arati, there's this, the Pala Stuti is, I say it every day, and all of a sudden, out of context, I can't say it. Shri Madguru Arashtakame Turuchai, Brahme Muhurte Patiti Priyatnat, Yustena Vrindavana Nata Sakshat Seva Eva Labhya Janashonta Eva. Anybody who sings these 8 beautiful verses glorifying the spiritual master, certainly, Eva, certainly attains Srimad Vrindavana, direct service to Krishna in Vrindavan. That's what it's about. And that's an interesting thing to point out, because in Madhuri Kadambani, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also points out that Guru Bhakti, that devotion to the service to the Guru, is so powerful that one may even disregard, may even neglect the other. You know, in order to execute that, one may even neglect the other, the Navalakshana Bhakti. And that's not that Navalakshana Bhakti is wimpy or anything like that. It's that service to the spiritual master, devotion to the service to the spiritual master. Vishrambhena Guru Seva, intimate, affectionate service to the spiritual master is so powerful that even if something goes lacking in your day because of your service to the spiritual master, it's covered. Because, what did Shiva tell Parvati? Aradhananam sarvisham, Vishnur aradhanam sarvam. The best of all religions is devotion to Vishnu. However, tasmat parataram devi, but, my dear devi, my dear wife, even better than that, tasmat parataram devi, tadiyanam samarjanam, service to those things that are connected, Tulsi Devi, the temple, the devotees, service to those things that are connected with Krishna, even better. So yeah, it's a big thing. Okay, I have to stop. Thank you so much for your patience. All glories to and your quick questions and comments. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.